Hi, this is Dark Journalist. Today we have the exciting finale of our three-part investigation into the events of 9/11 with Dr. Joseph Farrell. Now, in the first two episodes, we focused on the three levels operating that day and the exotic directed energy weapon that was used to cause massive destruction. The first two episodes are available at darkjournalist.com. Now, in this episode, we'll pull together all the threads and go deeply into the aftermath of these events almost 15 years later. Where do we go from here? Can we bring transparency to an operation shrouded in secrecy by a shadowy network? Here we go. Dr. Joseph Farrell, Deep State Disinfo, and the aftermath of 9/11.
You've got financial crimes, you've got occult ritual, you've got demonstrations of technology, and so on and so forth. You're aiming to accomplish all of these things all at once. My advice to people in this field is you've got to wake up to the fundamental core reality of the post-World War II world, and that is that these fascist elites, both in Europe and Japan, survived.
You know, as we've gone through these first two episodes on 9/11 with Dr. Joseph Farrell, it becomes more and more obvious that operating side by side with our public state is something that is slowly becoming visible, even as it develops new walls of secrecy. Some say it's technology or rising awareness that is making the picture more clear. If it is true that we have a clearer, deeper vision right now, it's also true that modern society is more distracted than ever. Can these two extremes be reconciled? Let's go ask Dr. Joseph Farrell.
Dark Journalist will go there. The deepest issues, the hardest stories, the biggest secrets. The truth is never easy. With top guests, like former Assistant Housing Secretary Catherine Austin Fitz.
Catherine, who is really behind this media censorship?
Internet feeds go through satellites. Who controls the satellites? It's the Pentagon.
Legendary investigator Graham Hancock.
Graham, this cataclysm must have destroyed an advanced culture in our ancient past.
It truly was an extinction-level event. It was accompanied by massive animal extinctions. It was accompanied by huge and unexplained sea level rises, and then a sudden plunge of global temperatures.
Best-selling author Jim Mars.
Jim, don't these elite corporate owners need us around to buy their GMO food? Why would they want to depopulate?
Because they are eugenicists and they believe that they need to purify the human race. And if that sounds like the Nazis, that's exactly what it is.
Coast to Coast AM investigative reporter Linda Moulton Howe.
Linda, how are we going to scale that wall of UFO secrecy?
Humans themselves are bypassing, are beginning to dismiss all of the policies of denial and lies.
Dark journalists will go there. Visit darkjournalist.com and subscribe now for a special spring discount available for just $39 for one full year. You'll not only receive access to the complete audio archives to stream or download at your convenience, you'll also get exclusive subscriber-only content and Dark Journalist event discounts. Sign up for our free newsletter to stay updated on the latest shows. Dark Journalist, let's get the real story in 2016.
You know, we need dark journalists, so just keep doing what you're doing.
Well, hello everyone. This is going to be a fascinating part three episode on 9/11 that brings the first two episodes together. Now, some of the revelations in these interviews with Dr. Farrell are truly breathtaking, and as usual, he really connects the dots in a completely unique fashion. So I can't wait for this one. Of course, this month of June will be packed with more groundbreaking episodes, I can promise you that. So make sure you're signed up for the Dark Journalist newsletter, so we can let you know when it happens. Joseph, thank you for joining us for part three on your new book dealing with the events of 9/11. Now, the book has a fascinating title, Hidden Finance, Rogue Networks, and Secret Sorcery, and you have 9/11 there in the subtitle.
Mm-hmm.
It's such an interesting combination of 9/11 with secret sorcery, and I really like how bold that is, because it really opens up the vista of what we're actually dealing with here.
Yeah, I've I've always maintained that if you're planning an operation that huge, what you do is you nest multiple objectives in one operation. You've got financial crimes, you've got occult ritual, you've got demonstrations of technology, and so on and so forth. You're aiming to accomplish all of these things all at once. And it's the same thing in Iraq. I think it's true that we were looking for weapons of mass destruction.
Mm-hmm.
But what people were led to believe, you know, chemical, biological, nuclear weapons. These were not the kinds of weapons of mass destruction that the powers that be were looking for. They were looking for the ancient stuff. So we'll tell a half-truth to cover up what we're really going in there for.
Right, right. Well, it's the op that's out in the open that can sometimes be the best concealed. Now, this fall, we're coming up to 15 years since the events of 9/11. What has been the global impact, and particularly here in America, of this operation in terms of our society and governance structure?
Well, stop and think of it. This country has, in 15 short years, turned into a banana republic and a police state. The political process alone is an indicator that something huge is amiss. We have a Clinton running yet again. And, you know, the British magazine, The Economist, last year came out with an op-ed piece basically to the effect saying, is this the best you can do? You're running another Bush and another Clinton.
Right.
And now what we've seen with Senator Sanders and with Mr. Trump is a huge grassroots backlash against any sort of involvement of the political elites, because people, I think, intuitively realize that there's something drastically wrong. All right. I don't think that they're yet connecting it to the events of 9/11, although Mr. Trump did.
Yes.
In his debates when he questioned the whole narrative and basically branded himself a 9/11 truther. You know?
Right.
You know, good for him. You know, good for him. That
was an amazing moment.
It was an amazing moment because it injected it back into the agenda as to why this situation is now. On the scale of geopolitics, 9/11 has been the excuse under which the American security state, national security state, has expanded its military presence around the world, fighting an invisible enemy called radical Islam. It's been the excuse and pretext under which we've done all of this, and under which, as a result, we have geopolitically undermined the whole post-World War II Congress of Vienna version, if you will, of international order. Our allies, you know, our strong allies, Britain, France, Italy, Germany, and so on, Japan, are looking at us with very jaundiced eyes. Japan is rearming, and I think, and I've argued, that Japan is doing so because they simply no longer want to be subservient, you know, a subservient satrapy of Washington, D.C. and Wall Street.
Mm-hmm.
They are making huge strides to patch up relationships with Russia. So we're looking at the collapse of a system that was carefully put into place after World War II simply because of our aggression and our arrogance and our unipolarism as a result of 9/11. So any way we slice it, this is the central event of the age. And therefore, if we're going to understand what's going on and do something about this, we have to address the narrative.
Yeah.
Because it's on the basis of that narrative that we've undertaken all these actions. If the narrative is false, the actions themselves are questionable.
Right, right, absolutely. And I think it's difficult for an average person to accept the fact that the official story isn't the whole story. So I think it would be good here for a moment to revisit how it felt for you when you realized, based on your analysis, that something else was going on here.
When the towers came down, the first thing I thought, okay, this is controlled demolition of some sort. Although it doesn't look like a standard controlled, conventional controlled demolition. The buildings are literally just being blown apart, quite literally, powderized, pulverized. So I thought, okay, there's a unique mechanism at work here. And for me, the big thing was, with all the talk about terrorism that morning, I thought you would not need to bring the towers down in order to accomplish your objective with this false flag operation of projecting American power in the Middle East. So in other words, the towers appeared to me as overkill if that was the only objective. All you would really need to do is hijack some planes, crash them into buildings, create a loss of life, and off we go.
Right.
Bringing the towers down was overkill to me. So I immediately thought, uh-oh, we're dealing with a three-leveled operation. Somebody else got inside of it and brought them down, much to the surprise of the people planning at level two.
Mm-hmm.
So on 9/11, my thought was, and has remained my thought, that we were looking at an operation within an operation within an operation, that there were three levels.
Right. And the description of the three levels is available in depth in part one and two. So can you just do a brief overview of them here for context on this?
The first level is the level of the official narrative. It's the hijackers flying planes into buildings. Okay, that's level one.
Right.
Level two is the operation behind it. In other words, as the 9/11 truth community began immediately to investigate the official narrative, they began to point out that there were too many drills being run concurrently with 9/11 that mirrored aspects of the actual 9/11 attack. And that could only mean that level one is the level of the Patsies, the Lee Harvey Oswalds. Level two is a rogue network within the American military intelligence complex that actually planned and pulled off the operation. All right. Now, the third level, then, is the level that penetrated that operation and brought the towers down, much to the surprise of level two. So, in other words, during 9/11 itself, and I belabor this point in the book, during 9/11 itself, you have a very peculiar thing happening if you really pay attention to the details of events that day.
Yes, and one of the core details was about Level 3's access to secret codes in various government agencies. Now, we've touched on this in the past two episodes, but can you clarify here how Level 2 discovered this breach?
Apparently, a call was placed to the White House switchboard where the people behind Level 3, in my thinking, communicated to the American government that they were in possession of top secret codes for the Department of Energy, the DEA, the FBI, CIA, DIA, U.S. Marine Intelligence, Naval Intelligence, and so on. Basically, they showed that they had penetrated the entire structure. Now, what most people don't know is that on 9/11, the United States military was conducting force-wide strategic nuclear drills. In other words, all of our nuclear forces, submarine ballistic missiles, land-based ballistic missiles, bombers, the whole nine yards, were on full military alert. So in other words, that drill could have been flipped live. We had not been on that high of a nuclear alert since the Cuban Missile Crisis.
Wow.
So in other words, if you're running that drill and then someone phones you and say, oh, by the way, Air Force One is next and we've got all these codes. If you're sitting in Washington, D.C. in the White House Situation Room like Dick Cheney, the first thing you're thinking is, oh, my God, they might be able to launch those missiles. So it's absolutely necessary for President Bush to head off that kind of coup, to zip to Barksdale, which is the backup command for strategic command, and then from there to Offutt in order to assert personal presence and presidential authority over the nuclear command structure. That's how bad it was. And that's right there is the clue that you have a third level of the operation that has penetrated everything else and flipped the whole thing inside out. So, you know, when I when I read that in those 9/11 researchers beginning that started to mention this type of stuff in 2003 and 2004, I thought, there's our third level. Now, the question is, who is that third level? That's the $64,000 question.
And your answer in this breakthrough series of interviews here is that it's this fascist international network.
Right.
They're the group at level three, blackmailing level two, which is the rogue element in the deep state, with their own operation.
Yes.
Well, this is a fascinating conclusion that you've come to based on your deep research on this. In your work on 9/11, you've incorporated some excellent research from other 9/11 investigators, like the late Michael Rupert. It was really amazing. And also, there's great stuff from Jim Mars and Webster Tarpley in your book. It's very high quality and detailed work there. Mm-hmm. But when you look out at the 9/11 research community now, and if you wanted to give them advice about where to move forward, you know, what aspects to further investigate, what would you tell them?
Well, that's an excellent question. I would say that the whole problem with 9/11 research thus far, with maybe the exception of Tarpley and Mars, is that most of the researchers are not casting their net nearly wide enough. Tarpley makes the case, as I pointed out in the book, that this is an exercise that was at level two, and he thinks there's basically only two levels. Although he does himself suggest a third.
Yes.
But he makes the point that this American deep state has been around since the Spanish-American War. And he's correct. So we need to cast the net wider. My advice to people in this field is you've got to wake up to the fundamental core reality of the post-World War II world. And that is that these fascist elites, both in Europe and Japan, survived and are still extremely powerful. And as I've been trying it over several decades to demonstrate, very well connected and very influential. They are players in the field. They're not the only players, to be sure, but they are players in the field. So I would say to the 9/11 truth community, first of all, cast your net much wider than you are. Start connecting dots in a much more general and sophisticated way than has been done thus far. The other thing I would say is that the 9/11 community has really self-destructed because of the acrimony and just plain viciousness that exists between certain researchers and other researchers. Particularly when it comes to the question of the mechanism of the destruction of the Twin Towers. As I pointed out to you, Dr. Wood, for example, has been under such tremendous assault and oftentimes of a very ungentlemanly, vicious nature. And the critiques leveled against her could be fired right back against the people leveling them. I read one guy talking about mini nukes, accusing her of not having proposed any model and so on and so forth. And, you know, the usual stuff. She's a shill. She's there to obfuscate the data and misdirect people and so on and so forth. No, she has suffered immense personal loss, if you know her story, and it's there publicly on her website. You know, they level these criticisms at her, and at the same time, they're not proposing a model for mini nukes. You know, we're just supposed to believe that these things exist, whose principles of nuclear physics are totally unknown to us.
Oh, yeah.
So there's no model, folks. What I would suggest is everybody take a deep breath and realize that every model that you're proposing has its problems. There's no getting around it. Everybody take a deep breath. Try and be courteous to each other. Listen to each other, because you might pick up clues from each other that would, if put together, which is, I'm attempting to do in the book, would give you a clue as to the architecture of what we're dealing with. Instead of this faction and that faction advocating this theory and that theory to the exclusion of all others. I think when you start doing that, you're missing the point. You're missing the picture. All of those mechanisms of the destruction of the Twin Towers each have evidence for the mechanism, from controlled demolition to exotic energy. All four of those mechanisms have their own unique problems. So rather than saying it's only this mechanism or only that mechanism, assume that there's more than one level involved in the operation, and the mechanisms then can change. And all of them might be at work. There's no reason to assume that they're not.
Right. Now, that's an excellent point, and it's not an either-or situation, and it shouldn't have to be looked at that way. One thing I'd be curious about here is if you think the 9/11 research community has been infiltrated by disinfo to obfuscate the investigations. For example, you know, themes like no planes and holograms.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And this type of thing.
Yeah.
Are these junk conspiracies that are intentionally placed in the mix to confuse things?
Yeah. The virtual planes and the hologram theory, I don't even get into. I don't even want to go there because I do think that a certain amount of that was deliberately injected.
Yeah.
There, if you're going to, you know, what we have to remember, and again, the JFK assassination is the template here. Because if you look at what happens with JFK, you not only have to pull off the operation, you have to control the cover-up and the resulting narrative.
Right.
And so if you look at the aftermath of JFK, what do you find? Well, you find vilification of people questioning the narrative. Well, they're just conspiracy theorists and so on. Of course, now that whole situation has changed. You're in the minority if you believe the Warren Report now. And it's thanks to those researchers that got in and tore it to shreds.
Right, exactly.
But the other thing that happened was you had them killing witnesses. You know, this is a classic JFK thing. You had them attempting, in other words, to control the narrative over the long term. And part of the control of that narrative was to sharpen the divisions within the JFK research community so that you had, you know, the Cubans did it, the mafia did it, the CIA did it. You had all these people, just like you see with the 9/11 community, defending one version of the story to the exclusion of all others and creating tension within the community.
Mm-hmm.
But when you step back from all of that and distance yourself from the acrimony, and look at what all of these researchers have said, you can then put together a synthetic picture and incorporate elements of all of them, which is what I attempted to do in the LBJ book, because they all are true. And that means, therefore, and thank goodness for Peter Dale Scott, who was really kind of the first one to take this approach, that they're all true. And the reason why is you've got a deep state mechanism where all of these elements are always involved on a day-to-day operational basis. Well, I think the same thing has to happen in the 9/11 community. They need to quit hating each other and throwing, you know, the most vicious ad hominems that you can think of at each other and assume a more academic, scholarly pose with respect to all of it and try to create a synthetic picture out of all of it. And that, I think, has been sadly lacking.
Yes, it's an excellent point. And when you mentioned Professor Peter Dale Scott there, I flashed to one of our discussions, and you know he's been on the show so many times, introducing this audience to what he calls the deep state after 40 years of research. And one of the major themes that he's focused on in this connection between the JFK assassination and 9/11 is the connection and the crossover of people involved in COG, the continuity of government operations.
Yes.
The personnel involved with COG show up again and again in these deep events.
Yes.
And that goes with what you're saying, because whoever is operating at that level has to have their hands on this mechanism.
Yes. The COG, the continuity of government operation and planning, is, I think, the core of level two.
Okay.
I think it's the core, if you will, of the American fascist faction, if you want to call it that, or the Sullivan and Cromwell crowd, as I've called it in other places. I think this is the core of it. And you're dealing, therefore, with that group of people for whom two things are part of their personal psychic makeup. And that is, number one, national security and the survival of enough of us to continue civilization. And that leads to the second part of their psychic makeup. And that is, they're willing to do anything, bend any moral or even legal code in order to ensure that that's possible. So in other words, you're dealing ultimately with utterly amoral people that have not ultimately the slightest concern with, you know, the average person on the street. And therefore, this is the kind of people that will get in bed with unsavory groups like Japanese Yakuza and Mafia and Nazis and drug lords and what have you.
Right.
In order to ensure that will take place.
Yes, absolutely. It's that very tangible thread from the Kennedy assassination through 9/11 that shows a kind of parallel state operating side by side with our own public state. And the fact that COG, by its very nature, is so ultra secret that there will be no oversight by a Senate Intelligence Committee. It actually was brought up during questioning of Oliver North back during the Reagan era and the whole Iran-Contra hearings.
Yes.
But Senator Inouye shut it down immediately because, you know, we can't discuss that doomsday network.
Yes.
So it really is the ultimate staging ground for these deep events.
Yes, absolutely. I totally agree. And as far as continuity of government operations go, in terms of this hypothesis of mine that you're looking at an op within an op within an op, or in other words, a penetrated operation at the second level. Let's go all the way back to Operation Valkyrie in Nazi Germany. What was Operation Valkyrie? It was the Nazi continuity of government plan. Should there ever be an attempt at a coup d'etat or any other catastrophe that would pose a threat to the Nazi government? And what did the plotters do? They used that continuity of operation plan against the government to stage a coup d'etat.
Yes, that's right. Absolutely.
So, you know, the whole idea is possible. It's not only possible, it's actually been tried, you know.
Yeah. You know, I'm glad you mentioned that, actually, because it reminded me of the Operation Northwoods proposal.
Oh, yeah.
The simulated hijackings that the Pentagon tried to force on President Kennedy. And he rejected it flat out, even though the Joint Chiefs had accepted it. And Kennedy actually ended up removing General Lemnitzer as chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff for coming up with such an immoral and creepy proposal.
Yeah, exactly. Create enough of a furor in the American public to allow you to launch your invasion of Cuba and send the missiles over to Russia. And what better way to do that than load a plane full of American citizens, substitute does this sound fishy? Think Flight 77 here, folks. Substitute another plane for it and have the first plane with all the citizens and innocents land somewhere and swear them to secrecy, you know, under threat to their lives and their children's lives under the 10th generation, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, you've got even that factoring in here and playing possible part of the pattern of 9/11. Absolutely.
Well, there it is again. You know, it's showing that pattern of how these people operate when they feel they're acting in secret. So from JFK to 9/11, it's really been a steady influence.
Yes.
Now, Joseph, the book is really a major achievement. And, you know, by pulling all these overlooked pieces together, you've really created something that is very unique. So one of the things I found interesting in there is this email you sent to a cousin. Now, can you tell us about it? I think this was in 2006.
The email itself, I believe, was either it was somewhere 2006, 7 or 8, somewhere in there. He wrote me the email and he had, you know, I hadn't seen or talked to this cousin since I was 9 years old. So, you know, this came to me as a bolt from the blue, and it resulted from the fact that he'd been reading some of my books without knowing that it was his cousin. And then he talked to my uncle and said, oh yeah, that's your cousin. And that's how he got in touch with me. But he asked me what I thought 9/11 was. And that was my first attempt in that email to lay out this three-tiered operation and draw on, you know, popular themes and movies and so on, James Bond movies and so on, to try and show him the way I was thinking at that time. So I've been thinking about it for a very, very long time. And, you know, on the day of 9/11 itself, that's what I was thinking. And that was you know, long before I started doing any of these Nazi books or banking books and so on and so forth. I thought that this is what we were looking at. This was an operation that clearly at one level had to have been planned from within the American deep state, but at another level looked to me like it had gone terribly wrong. You know, it was kind of like Dr. Judy Wood says in her book, you know, she saw it happen. So what she did is she turned the volume down on the television. She wasn't listening to the commentary. She was just watching what was going on. And I had kind of the same attitude, although I kept the volume up because I wanted to hear the spin that was being put out already, you know, and it was clear that they were putting out spin.
Right.
You know, you were looking at windows and already they're talking about, well, there's a possibility that the airplane fuel and the fires might cause the buildings to collapse. And I thought, are you kidding?
Yeah, it's absurd.
Are you nuts? No.
Right.
I'm not seeing oxygen-rich fires burning in those things, folks. I don't know about the rest of you, but I'm not. It was something that I decided, you know, I would eventually write a book on, but I knew I had to do a lot of spade work before I did it. And that's why I had to do the third way before I did this book.
Yes, it definitely is an incredible setup for this book. And actually, I recommend everyone read that book with this book to have that whole picture of the fascist network that you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to say that you taking on the subject of 9/11 is really a breakthrough, especially with your hunting down these previously unknown facts and connections. It's a major development, and it's 10 years in the making. So this is very careful work on your part. And for me, having read your books for many years, it feels like the culmination of all of your work.
Mm-hmm. In a certain sense, it is. It's a culmination of looking at what can happen if you make dirty deals with rotten, evil people and let them, you know, have their own way for decades and decades. You know, it's going to come back and bite you, and that's what I think happened. I don't think that having followed this story for so long, I don't think we're anywhere close to seeing the end of it. I think there's going to be new aspects of the story coming out now. We're seeing Europe turning into a powder keg, and I'm very suspicious of that whole refugee crisis thing over there. I'm very, very deeply suspicious of it. Japan rearming. This is another aspect of the story that, to me is hugely significant. You know, we told the Japanese, we want you to trade. And then we told them, well, we want you to build battleships. So they sank our fleet. And so then we said, well, we want you to trade now.
Right. Yeah. Learn the lesson.
Now we've gone back and said, well, we need you to take up more of the burden of the defense in the Pacific. So, you
know, bad idea.
We're on this treadmill, you know, we're just going in circles. But I think it's a huge thing that's happening in Japan. You know, Merkel, I have a blog coming up about this. Merkel offered to Abe to have Japan join NATO. And I thought, oh my, we are getting desperate now, aren't we? You know.
Well, it sounds like it. It actually sounds Axis to me.
Yeah, it's an Axis, you know. Okay, you know. Gee, where have we heard this before? You know?
Yeah, it's got a ring to it for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, it we're on a treadmill, and you know, 100 years out from World War I, and you know, 70 some years out from World War II, nothing really that much has changed geopolitically. 9/11 has just shown us that besides nation states, there are corporate actors, there are financial actors, there are deep global criminal undergrounds that are actors on the world stage, and that's a new thing. And I think until we adequately comprehend this fact, everybody thinks of Mr. Global, the globalists. Well, there are certainly actors, but they're not alone. And that's the whole burden of this. We have to start thinking in very unconventional terms if we're going to be anywhere close to understanding the transitions that we're going to be under in the next century or so. Absolutely.
Wow, amazing stuff. Well, the book is incredible, and
Thank you. The information
is just overflowing with revelations. It's available at GizaDeathStar.com.
Right.
And I think it's really going to open up some very new conversations in a way that we haven't seen on the subject of 9/11 in the past.
Yeah, it's one of those things. I think it's very deliberately designed, as you pointed out, to be plugged into the preceding books. But it's also a standalone book. But I hope people will take the clues and the dots and start drawing connections. That's really what I'm hoping will come out of it.
You've got a lot of bombshells in this one.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And I think many readers have hoped and daydreamed that you would someday go after the subject. And here it is.
I don't know that they've had the fantasy. Can say that over the years, I've had a lot of people asking me about it. And I've basically kept my comments to, well, I think it was a three-leveled operation, but I haven't really explained in detail why I think that. And now I've attempted to, so we'll see what happens. As I said before we got started, I'm sure the hate email is coming from all sorts of people.
Only from trolls.
Only from trolls. That's right.
Thank you so much, Joseph. Just incredible.
Thanks for having me back.
And it's GizaDeathStar.com. Everyone can visit there for more.
Right.
And we're done with our three-part series. Great job. Terrific stuff. Thanks so much.
All right.
Thank you for joining me for this three-part series with Dr. Joseph Farrell on 9/11. You can find more deep interviews, documentaries, and special reports at www.darkjournalist.com. You can also subscribe here to our YouTube channel to see the latest videos. See you soon.
Dark Journalist will go there. The deepest issues, the hardest stories, the biggest secrets. The truth is never easy. With top guests, like former Assistant Housing Secretary Catherine Austin Fitz.
Catherine, who is really behind this media censorship?
And internet feeds go through satellites. Who controls the satellites? It's the Pentagon.
Legendary investigator Graham Hancock.
Graham, this cataclysm must have destroyed an advanced culture in our ancient past.
It truly was an extinction-level event. It was accompanied by massive animal extinctions. It was accompanied by huge and unexplained sea level rises, and then a sudden plunge of global temperatures.
Best-selling author Jim Mars.
Jim, don't these elite corporate owners need us around to buy their GMO food? Why would they want to depopulate?
Because they are eugenicists and they believe that they need to purify the human race. And if that sounds like the Nazis, that's exactly what it is.
Coast to Coast AM investigative reporter Linda Moulton Howe.
Linda, how are we going to scale that wall of UFO secrecy?
Humans themselves are bypassing, are beginning to dismiss all of the policies of denial and lies.
Dark journalists will go there. Visit darkjournalist.com and subscribe now for a special spring discount available for just $39 for one full year. You'll not only receive access to the complete audio archives to stream or download at your convenience, you'll also get exclusive subscriber-only content and Dark Journalist event discounts. Sign up for our free newsletter to stay updated on the latest shows. Dark Journalist, let's get the real story in 2016.
You know, we need dark journalists, so just keep doing what you're doing.